Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Bautista is a free agent at the end of the year. That's his first salvo. I'd like to stay.
Down the line and left. Pretty well hit. That ball is gone. Mark Trumbo, the major league leader in home runs, has given Baltimore the lead.
The Jimenez pitch. Fly ball deep left field. Yes, sir. The Blue Jays are going to Texas. Edwin Encarnacion.
Jimenez ready and delivers. Encarnacion, fly ball. Left field, the season is over. Encarnacion, a three-run homer, and the Orioles are going home.
Was everything okay with Zach Britton, and if so, why was he not used?
He was fine. He was fine. He was available.
Is it the philosophical thing of not wanting to use your closer in a tie game on the road?
No, it's the same thing in the 8th inning and 9th inning. I like the job that Darren could do. I like the job that Brad could do. I like the job that Michael could do. I like the job that Dunson could do. Looked like it was going to be one of those that was going to be more than one inning. Nobody's been pitching better for us than Ubaldo, too. There's a lot of different ways to look at it. That's the way we went. It didn't work out. It had nothing to do with philosophical.
It had to be made. There is simply no way that you can lose a winner-take-all game like that without using a relief pitcher who has the greatest ERA in a season of any pitcher ever. It's allowed 4 earned runs the entire season, 1 earned run since April, and to not use him in that game and go home is something that's going to be very difficult for this team to live with.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Well, I got to tell you this. I spent a good deal of yesterday's show telling you that a one-game play-in game is not playoff baseball. But I will give it up to the Baltimore Orioles and to the Toronto Blue Jays because what they did last night for 11 innings sure as hell felt like playoff baseball. And I give them all, yeah. I still stand by my statement, though, yesterday. I still stand by the belief that yesterday's game and tonight's game between the Giants and the Mets in New York is a play-in game and not a playoff game. I stand by that, and the reason why is this. If the Toronto Blue Jays won a playoff game yesterday, then what's the series right now? What's the what are they? Are they up a game?
That would be 1-0 Toronto.
Wait a minute. No, they're not up a game because it's over because it was just a play-in game. The baseball games are played in series. They always have been. They always will be. Excuse me, playoff games. Playoff games are series games. They always have been. They're a part of a series. They're either beginning a series or they're ending a series. They can't do both at the same time. Then it's a play-in game.
Heck, baseball is a schedule, Bob, is nothing but series.
Exactly.
Unless you're raking up a rain-out game, there is no one-game series in baseball.
And that is the argument that I have made for the last 2 years, and it was really kind of like going into the last year, into 2015, or maybe it was actually three, Jim. I'm trying to remember. When did Kenny Lofton kind of criticize the Cleveland Indians 2013, air quote, playoff, end quote, appearance? Was that going into the 2014 year or the 2015 year?
I don't remember which one, but I know it was one of those two, yeah.
I want to say 2015, so it wasn't quite as fresh, you know, as it would have been just literally, you know, the spring following that. But when the Indians, you know, won their last 10 games in a row in 2013 to make the play-in game against the Devil Rays, were they Devil at that time? Or no,
no. Ever since they've been halfway decent, they've been just the Rays.
yeah, there you go. So anyway, but they played the Rays, and Kenny Lofton made some comments in the offseason where he was just like kind of sneering, like, man, that ain't playoffs. Last time we made the playoffs, I was on the team, and it was 2007. That's the last time we made the playoffs. That was like a play-in. I don't know if he used the words play-in, but he was making the argument that a one-gamer to see who goes into the division series is a play-in game, not a playoff game. And it got a lot of Indians fans very upset. And I know I get a lot of Indians fans upset when I keep talking about it here 2 years after that. Now 3 years since 2013. But to me, that's what it is. It remains a play-in game. But I will say this, what a hell of a play-in game last night by the Toronto Blue Jays and by the Baltimore Orioles. And we're going to talk about that. First of all, welcome to the extravaganza. very nice baseball montage put together there for you, showing the two different moods, if you will, in the calls. In Baltimore, the Baltimore radio call, about 2 seconds after that Ubaldo Jimenez pitch to Edwin Encarnacion, just left his bat like a laser, like a video game laser, just like it was just like, you know, it was glowing. It was like, shoo! I mean, it was out of here so fast. Like 2 seconds after the pitch was hit, the Orioles announcer says, and the season's over.
That's about the only thing that was to say, by the way, in both of those calls, was about 2 seconds in, each announcer realizes, yep, that's gone, we're done.
And then the Toronto announcer, 2 seconds after the pitch was thrown, says, and we're going to Texas. It was just like, bang. It was that quick. And, of course, now, and this is what I want to take a little bit of time with today, and I want you to bear with me. We'll get to your calls at 866-240-1065. Excuse me, I'm still fighting a cold. 866-240-1065. But bear with me for a moment, because everybody has had a say about this today in the world of hindsight that we live in as sports fans, is in the world of 2020 vision, because it's all been played out, in the world of second-guessing, in the world of getting to react rather than having to be proactive, because that's what it is. That's what being a fan and being in sports radio in our case is, and you know, those who write for a living, baseball for a living, there's going to be second guessing, and they get to be reactive to what happened to Buck Showalter and to his Baltimore Orioles yesterday. Buck Showalter gets to be proactive, has to be proactive when it comes to making decisions for his baseball team, especially when you're in a playoff game, in a go-win-or-go-home game, an elimination game, whatever it is you want to call it, play-in game. He has to be proactive and make these decisions. And Buck Showalter apparently is Jim Cushlin, and Jim Cushlin apparently is Buck Showalter. Because Jim Cushlin, how many times have I fought with you over the last 2 years doing this radio show about your little hard and fast, I don't like using closers in non-save situations. I save the closer for the save situation. Don't use the closer in an unsafe situation. They just never seem to get the job done. Apparently, Buck Showalter agreed with you, and Buck Showalter is a believer in not using your closer until it's time to close.
Well, that's his first mistake right there, listening to me.
And the problem, of course, is that save situation never materialized for the Baltimore Orioles. And everybody this morning is kicking Buck Showalter while he's down. Analysts all over baseball are just running him down left and right, talking about what a terrible decision this was. We heard one of them toward the end of that montage there that Jim Cushlin just played. Tim Kirchin of ESPN just letting go with both barrels at Buck Showalter.
Dunson could do.
That's not him. Where is he?
One inning. Nobody's been pitching better for us than Ubaldo, too. There's a lot of different ways to look at it. That's the way we went. It didn't work out. It had nothing to do with philosophical.
That's Buck himself. Now here's Tim Kirk.
It had to be made. There is simply no way that you can lose a winner-take-all game like that without using a relief pitcher who has the greatest ERA in a season of any pitcher ever. It's allowed 4 earned runs the entire season, 1 earned run since April, and to not use him in that game and go home is something that's going to be very difficult for this team to live with.
Tim Kirchin joining a lot of other folks in suggesting that this might be something that Buck Showalter can't not only live with, but can't live down. Some are saying already that this might cost Buck Showalter his job. Now, before I play a little bit more of that from some other analysts, let me just say this to anybody who thinks that Buck Showalter shouldn't be a manager anymore for making this decision that you are judging based on knowing the outcome and the result. He had to make based upon not knowing what the outcome and the result would be. If you were to ever think about firing one of the best baseball men in the game, and I don't care if we're talking today or last year or in the 1980s or in the 1950s, Buck Showalter is an absolute baseball genius. I love this guy. What he has done in Baltimore to turn them around has been nothing short of remarkable. He knows more baseball than 99.9% of the planet will ever, he's forgotten more than we'll ever know. And if he were to be fired, I promise you he'd be hired the next day. There would be clubs firing managers just to say, let's see if we can get Buck. Because that's how good a manager he is. No matter what you think about this decision, that's what I will say about Buck Showalter. I'll say more after you hear from Chris Singleton talking about Showalter last night.
The big question is, where was Zach Britton tonight? I mean, coming into this game, knowing the Orioles have such a strong bullpen, Zach Britton, a guy, not only would you think to perhaps get three outs, but in a big game like tonight, perhaps five outs, we didn't even see him get up again in the bullpen after he was up in the eighth inning. Very bizarre. When you're on the road and the game's tied, I mean, you don't have the luxury of getting to the next inning and thinking you're going to get the lead. I'm not questioning Buck Showalter. He's a friend. I got a lot of respect, spent some time with him before the game today, but I really want to find out what the reasoning was.
Now, I don't know how you can say I'm not questioning Buck Showalter after questioning Buck Showalter about four different times there, because that's exactly what he was doing. This is Jason Stark of ESPN.
He clearly saved Ubaldo Jimenez for that type of situation where if he thought the game was going to be a marathon, he had a starting pitcher who was pitching well. And another irony, I mean, a lot of people on social media were second-guessing him for not starting Ubaldo Jimenez in this game. So there are a lot of ironies here, but that was how he thought it through. Ubaldo was going to be his quote-unquote long man, and obviously he felt good about him because he'd been so good for the last month and a half. But the best relief pitcher in the game needs to pitch in that game.
So, and by the way, Jason Stark, I think, was the most fair and objective and analytical in that discussion, because he's right. How many times have we seen games go into extra innings where they're in the 10th, they're in the 11th, and maybe you're expecting to go to the 12th, and you're thinking, if I can't burn through my pen one-inning guy at a time? And I especially don't want to use my ace, my Cy Young / MVP candidate, 0.54 ERA having ground ball specialist, Zach Britton, just for one inning in the middle of what might be a whole bunch of innings.
And you heard
and
it.
Hold on, Jim. Okay. Let me finish, please.
Go ahead.
You can't do, well, now I don't say you can't. What you can't do is sit here in hindsight and second guess Buck Showalter because you know that Jimenez gave up the winning runs. Because if Ubaldo Jimenez had gone through the 11th and gotten through, and then they didn't score, he's bringing Ubaldo out for the 12th. And then he's bringing him out for the 13th. And he's going to continue to do this probably for at least four or five innings. And how many times have we seen teams do that in extra inning games? I think I remember a game this year in which Trevor Bauer ended up having to come out of the pen and go four innings or five innings in relief in a long game and ended up getting a win when a starter needed to be used because you're just going to burn through all of your one-inning specialist kind of bullpen guys. And if Ubaldo Jimenez had gotten those guys out for an inning or two or three, and then they got the lead, and it's all about shutting down the home team for the final three, and Zach Britton is sitting there, your ace, your untouchable, one earned run allowed since April guy, Buck Showalter is being hailed as a genius. What a master stroke. Going to a starter like Ubaldo, who has never worked out of the pen, and getting two, three, or four innings of shutout relief from him before setting up Zach Britton, and then you know the game was over. That's what people would be saying about Buck Showalter. But because Ubaldo Jimenez gave up three hits and two guys are on first and third, and I admit there is a good case to be made here for going to Zach Britton with guys on first and second, knowing that he is a great ground ball pitcher, an 80% ground out rate of the outs that he records, that a double play ball there with one out and runners on first and third would have been just what the doctor ordered. Absolutely, I get that. And maybe you get out of that inning, and then maybe you get Zach Britton, and he goes scoreless again in the next inning, and you get five outs out of him. But then where are you? Now you are going probably to Ubaldo Jimenez in the 13th, and you still have the same conundrum. You've got to get through, I should say. Lord knows how many innings it's going to take before somebody scratches one across.
Yep.
And then, if it is the Orioles who push one across, who are you going to close with? Because you already used up your guy in the 11th and 12th. So for everybody to make this just such an open and shut case that Buck Showalter made the worst managerial decision in the history of this sport, I just think is so disingenuous. It is so unfair. It is so ill thought. It's wrong-headed. I can understand making a case if you just say, I think he should have gone to Britton in the 9th. I think he should have used Britton in the 10th. Think he should have. You can say that and make the argument. It's a good one because he's a great player and he at least would have contributed to whatever happened. But if you don't score after using him and make him the winner, he's used up now. And now you're really kind of struggling to figure out how you're going to finish this game. So if you want to make the argument, fine. There's a good argument to be made, and we can shake hands, high five, tap our beer glasses together, have a throw one back, and let's talk about the National League game tonight. But for all of the holier than thou people who are just, we know baseball better than Buck does. He should have used Zach Britton in the 9th or in the 10th or in the 11th or whatever the case might be, and the Orioles season would be rolling on. You're very unfair. You're being very, very irresponsible, I think, in your analysis, because you get to see it from the result standpoint. Buck Showalter and every major league manager has to see it pre-result. So he didn't know what was going to happen. He doesn't have the luxury of that. And second-guessing him now, I mean, it's fine to second-guess. That's what sports is. But to just denigrate him and to insult him in the way that people are, to me, is just wholly unfair.
Now, that part I'll agree with you, Bob, because, you know, that's kind of what I've been hearing and reading today, as if suddenly this one moves means, oh, yeah, forget all those years we've been saying Buck Showalter is one of the better managers in all of baseball. True, by the way. This negates it. And the stuff you're talking about, yes, I know I have that opinion, and I'll admit part of it came from my Indians fans' point of view, where there was such a stark difference just in Chris Perez. Remember Chris Perez? That's where I first, looked up some of the numbers on that. But Buck even mentions it in some of that post game, which we played, played the montage. I'll play it for you again. He even mentions, well, it had the feeling like that this was going to be one of those games where it just goes really long.
Looked like it was going to be one of those. It was going to be more than one inning. Nobody's been pitching better for us than Ubaldo, too.
Exactly. And you're on the road. So eventually, say it's the 14th. And you finally get that run across, take the lead. Then you bring in and Brighton, and everything's fine. That all being said, it was interesting that you never really brought him out for any point in the game before you got to that. But I'm certainly not going to criticize him, even though as you pointed out, I'm of the opinion don't use your closers in saves in non-save situations, just because statistically it shows that they're just not as good. Once you get into the 10th, 11th, 12th, and beyond, most of those, that kind of stuff goes out the window in to a certain degree.
Yeah, and this is the kind of thing that bothers me. David Schoenfield from ESPN.com. Quote, this is simple. Showalter screwed up. There are no excuses and no explanations that make sense. There is nothing that can make us understand why he would use Brian Dunsing, who has pitched 13 innings with the Baltimore Orioles, or Jimenez, who pitched well down the stretch but isn't a reliever and had a 5.54 ERA on the season. Showalter managed to get Britton a save, not to win the game. Meaning that's how he managed, not to win the game, but to get him to save the game. You cannot lose this game, especially when it goes 11 innings, without using the best reliever in baseball, the guy who allowed one earned run since April. It's a disgrace. It's one of the worst managerial decisions in postseason history. That's what David Schoenfield said. Let me give you a little bit more. Because this is really, to me, I mean, baseball is, and sports in general, of course, as I said, second-guessing decisions, that's what it's all about. It's why we're fans. It's why we do what we do for a living. I'm not saying you can't second-guess, but the round criticism and the almost unanimous belief that this was just an absolute stupid decision, as if doing it their way would have guaranteed they would have scored a run right when right after the happening that Zach Britton pitched to keep the game even. That kind of thing is what really sickens me. And here's another one. Jonathan Carey, I believe, Curry, K-E-R-I, whatever, CBS Sports. Why Buck Showalter made the stupidest managerial decision I've ever seen. And he goes on to argue in much the same way, the same kinds of things that Schoenfield did at ESPN.com. I say this to all of these individuals, and the other one that I read today, or is early this morning, and I can't find it, so I'm just going to have to go by memory here and paraphrase it. But to the other individual who said this was the worst case of a coach or manager overthinking an easy decision since Pete Carroll in the Super Bowl. And I thought to myself, it's a really good comparison, but not for the reasons the writer made that comparison, because I will say the same thing about this that I said about Pete Carroll not giving the ball to Marshawn Lynch at the one-yard line in the Super Bowl. That we are all guilty of being able to judge this thing from the post-game result. We sit in the post-game easy chair watching the replay over and over and say, it didn't work. Why didn't you give the ball to Lynch? It would have been easy. He would have walked in or powered in. After all, he's beast mode. He can just turn on beast mode anytime he wants. Why wouldn't you give it to him? And everybody just thinks they know the game better. But here's the fact of the case. Every single fan in America, and probably every player in the league, including those who were not in the Super Bowl but those watching it, expected Marshawn Lynch to get the football. If Russell Wilson throws that pass and it's a touchdown, Pete Carroll is being carried on his shoulders, or on the shoulders of his players, beg your pardon, through the streets of downtown Seattle as being the genius that crossed everybody up. Because with the defense, everybody, all 11 men going right at Marshawn Lynch, because it's a certainty that Marshawn Lynch, beast mode, is getting the ball. He is the only guy in the stadium who thought to do something different and hit a quick slant touchdown with Russell Wilson throwing that touchdown pass. He crossed up everybody. He is the only guy who was forward-thinking enough, progressive, and playing on a different level than every other coach, who thought everybody is going to go to Marshawn, watch this. Bink, one-yard touchdown pass. We're the champions. That's how it would have played out. People would have been lauding him once they saw the result. But because the result was pick, then guess what? Oh, what a dumb decision that was for Pete Carroll. Now, mind you, just to show you what kind of talk show host I am, and I've said this many times, I hate Pete Carroll. It's one of the reasons I hated the Seahawks. I can't stand the guy. I think he's a pompous, egotistical jerk. I've never liked Pete Carroll, not at USC, not when he was in the NFL earlier with the Patriots, not when he was with the Jets, not at where else has he been, for crying out loud, before he ended up back in Seattle, back in the NFL in Seattle. Doesn't matter. I've never liked the guy. I don't like the fact that he cheated at USC. So my point to that is I have no reason to defend him. I'm just an honest talk show host who's going to tell all sides of a story. And us sitting there and judging him after that Super Bowl as being an idiot for not giving the ball to Lynch is simply hindsight. In the same way that us cheering and saying what a brilliant guy he was for throwing that pass and scoring the touchdown to win it that way, we would be saying what an awesome thing, because we'd have hindsight. Well, I'm going to say the same thing here about Buck Showalter. So Jimenez gives up the bomb to Edwin Encarnacion, and Buck Showalter is the idiot who didn't use Zach Britton, the best reliever in baseball. He's the idiot who didn't find a way to get him in and shut down the Blue Jays for an inning or two or three. In other words, like every other Baltimore pitcher did in that game up until Jimenez. He was saving him for the opportunity to close this thing out. How would it have been, may have been any different if Zach Britton had shut down the Toronto Blue Jays in the 11th, and then let's say he gave him another inning into the 12th, but the game goes 15. Now they're still looking for somebody to close it out if the Orioles scratch across the run. There's no guarantee this is going to end in 11 just because Britton comes in. And there is certainly no guarantee that it's not going to be a 15, 18, 19-inning marathon game, in which case Buck Showalter, had the results been different, would have been called what? A genius. He took Ubaldo Jimenez, the starter who had been their best starter for his last six or seven starts the last month or month and a half of the season. He took Ubaldo Jimenez and put him in the pen and played a hunch that he could get him through four or five. And he did. And then they finally got the winning run. They got to the Blue Jays. And then he had Zach Britton sitting there to close the game out in 17. Buck Showalter's a genius. Pete Carroll crossed everybody up and hit that pass for a touchdown. He's a genius. I'm tired of the I know better, we know better, because we get to watch it after the fact. I'm not going to flambé Buck Showalter here any more than I did Pete Carroll. I'm not going to do that. I think it's unfair, and I think it's irresponsible, and I think they deserve better than that. They're making these decisions on the fly. We're making them with the benefit of newspaper columns, sports blogs, talk show host commentary, announcers, analysts, and everything else, quoting stats and saying, he's got an 80% ground ball rate, man. So clearly that would have been a way to win the game. Not going to do that. Give these guys a little bit of respect. Buck Showalter is one of the best managers in baseball, period. And I want to get your thoughts on all this. 866-240-1065. Hey, we do have Matt Lodi coming up to talk baseball, playoff baseball with us here in a couple of seconds. But let me get Pat in Perrysburg up and on the radio real quick, because he's been waiting since we got started this afternoon. Hey, Pat, go ahead, sir. What's on your mind?
Hey, a couple things. I totally disagree about the Showalter thing. What he has to do is give his guys a chance to go to the 15 innings like you're talking about to extend the game. He's got to use his best players to do that. And if he doesn't do it, he's doing his team a disservice.
Okay. Well, again, that's the opinion that we can certainly have in baseball and in sports. To me, though, again, it's the same thing. What's the difference whether he gets you through the 11th or somebody else gets you through the 11th? If you got to go to 16, and now when you're in 16 and you do get a chance to close the game, I got no closer. I'm still going to have to rely on Ubaldo Jimenez or somebody else, you know, as you burn through all of your relievers one by one by one. I'm going to have to turn to a starter at some point and hope he can get guys out to win the game. Nobody knows when that's going to happen. And I think
the thing is, you got runners on base.
I think it's unfair to say we do know when it would happen. Go ahead. What was that?
You got runners on base.
Yeah.
So you've got to do something to negate that. And that's,
yeah,
for
no,
any
and that's the one
reliever.
Thing I said where you do have it, not you, but I mean in general, the critics have an argument here, is that when there's first and third and there's one out and you need a ground ball double play to get out of this thing, absolutely you could make a case for going to Britton there. But again, the thought is, if he gets out of this, and Jimenez has been very, very good for the last month and a half, you know, we might have to go. We might have to settle in here for a while, and I want to save my guy for when I need him to close this game out. There is an argument to be made for that. It's just that we don't have the result that worked out in Showalter's favor, so suddenly he's the guy who doesn't know what he's doing.
To get to that if, though, you got to use your players to get to that. And
well,
if you
okay.
Don't.
Well, in that case, why? In that case, he shouldn't even have been available for the 11th, because they would have used him in the 9th. Why didn't they use him in the top of the 9th, or bottom of the 9th? Beg your pardon. Why didn't they use him in the bottom of the 9th?
I could not tell you, because I didn't even watch the game except for the last part of it. So.
Okay, well, did you watch the from the 9th on? My point is, you don't need to have watched the game, though, but the argument that you're making is use your best players. Okay, we're tied 2-2 here, going to the bottom of the 9th. Why don't you use your closer there? Why don't you make sure that nobody else gives up the winning run in the bottom of the 9th, in the same way that people are saying you should have used your closer so nobody else gives up the winning run in the bottom of the 11th? Why not use him where he normally pitches in the 9th?
And he probably should have, too. But I'm just saying, you got your best players. You need to extend the game and keep the game going to give yourself a chance, regardless who you're going to use after that.
Yeah, okay, I get your point, Pat. I guess, like I said, and this is the biggest question, and this is what makes sports so wonderful, as we can all try to figure this stuff out. And thanks for the call, Pat. This is what you do, though. You say, if I'm hell-bent on using my best reliever, and you should be, certainly, and I'm not sure I can get him to a place where we have a lead and I can use him to close, at what point is the right time to bring him in? Because if you brought him in the 9th, and he's used up now, even if you think he can go and get you 6 outs, even though he's not doing that, He hasn't been doing that. Even if you think he can get you six outs, okay, and you want to use him in the ninth and tenth, if the Orioles don't score, he's done. He's used up now. Now you still end up with a manager having to say, okay, now what do I do? Which of my lesser than Zach Britton relievers do I go to now? Because Britton's already done with his contribution. And his contribution was the same as the other one inning relievers that we had. He held them scoreless. Great. Now I got to find a lesser, lesser performer. I got to find somebody who's not as good as Britton to finish this thing out. First of all, while we try to, you know, scratch across a run and then to close on the other side. And I'm still probably going to have to go to a starter like Jimenez to try to get through this thing because I don't know how long it's going to go. There's no easy answer that says you use your closer in this situation in the ninth or in the 10th or in the 11th or in the 12th. It's a gut thing, and there is no way, in my estimation, there's no way for anybody to say that if you'd have done it this way, the Orioles would be on their way to Texas right now instead of the Blue Jays. And to say otherwise, I think, is just very, very disingenuous and unfair. Mark in Toledo. Go ahead, Mark. I got about 30 seconds for you. Then I got to get out. Go ahead, buddy.
Okay, real quick. I think Buck Showalter is a genius, but he should have used him in the ninth for the simple fact it's a play-in game. Let's be honest, okay? You don't leave your best players on the bench for a play-in game. Now, whether you're not, you get to the 12th, 13th, it doesn't matter because you're not thinking that far ahead. Anyway, your job is to get the lead and win the ball game. Use your best players in that situation. Second point is, let's be honest with the Pete Carroll situation. Russell Wilson threw a horrible pass. It's a slant on the one-yard line. It's supposed to be down and in, and nobody has ever made that point. Slant down and in. I play quarterback. You throw the ball down and in. It's not Pete Carroll. It's all Russell Wilson. You guys have a good one.
Thank you, man. Good call. And that's a great, 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 great point. Nobody put it on Russell Wilson. Nobody talked about it being a bad pass. They just talked about Pete Carroll making the bad call. And he's the one who has worn that for the last 2 years now. And that is exactly correct. And again, if Russell had thrown a great pass, Pete Carroll is the hero. As much as Russell Wilson is for the pass, and he'll probably be the MVP, Pete is the hero for crossing up everybody and throwing a pass when the rest of the world thought Marshawn was getting the football. Good call, my friend. Thank you for it. Let me get a timeout now. Come back, talk baseball playoff style with Matt Lodi right here on ESPN 106.5.
We are ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Who keeps you cheering year after year? Who's got the ballpark? The best is all right here.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza. ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yeah, we can't find the guy we were going to talk playoff baseball with. So Matt,
I had this all planned out nice and ready for it.
What's that, Chris?
I had this all planned out nice and ready for this.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, you did. The old Talking Tribe theme music as the Tribe takes on the Baltimore. The Boston Red Sox tomorrow, game number one, is going to be at Progressive Field. That game will be right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, will it not?
Yes, it will. 7:30, the coverage gets underway for the just after 8 o'clock first pitch for that one.
We're going to talk, if Lodi gets back to us in time here, we'll talk to him about this Buck Showalter thing too. But I do have more time now since we don't have Matt here. If you want to get in, what are your thoughts on whether or not Showalter should have used Britton? And try to put yourself, again, in the pre-result mode rather than the post-result mode. We know that Jimenez gave up the bomb, and it was a laser off the bat of Edwin Encarnacion. We know that. He gave up a bomb. And so post results, obviously, Showalter screwed up. Great. He got it wrong. But pre, do you at least understand his argument? That's where I'm going with this whole thing. And before I go any further, I want to remind you about the youngsters who are doing outstanding, excellent things on the fields and other playing surfaces of Northwest Ohio. And that means it's time for the KeyBank High School Athletes of the Week for this week. For the girls, the Perrysburg tennis team won their fourth straight NLL title, remaining unbeaten as a team during the NLL matches in Bowling Green. Caitlin Shankula won her singles match, while Nora Abdulaziz Balin Bilbray, I'm going with, no, Balabray, beg your pardon, Balabray, won their doubles match along with doubles winners Grace Allen Nofziger and Abby O'Connell. So congratulations to them. And for the boys, it's got to be Genoa football's Matt Bradfield, who ran 27 times for 139 yards and three touchdowns in a 27-0 win over Rossford on Friday. also recovered a fumble on defense, and in the downpour was the punter and kicked extra points as well. Genoa now 5-1 overall, 3-0 in the Northern Buckeye Conference to hold on to first place there. So there you go. Those are your KeyBank High School Athletes of the Week. Congratulations to them. We did not give you all. I want to provide context here of all of what Buck Showalter had to say in the postgame. So I want you to listen to this. Yesterday, of course, last night, after the walk-off win by the Toronto Blue Jays, Buck Showalter was asked naturally, and appropriately so, why didn't you use the closer with the 0.54 ERA, who hadn't given up an earned run since April? Why did you not bring him? This is the exchange he had with reporters.
Buck, was everything okay with Zach Britton, and if so, why was he not used?
No, he was fine. He was fine.
Did you just consider using him at any point?
Yeah, I considered a lot of things during the course of the game, but our guys did a good job getting us to that point. We just couldn't finish it off. But yeah, he was available.
Another one, Tyler?
Well, okay. I guess is it the philosophical thing of not wanting to use your closer in a tie game on the road?
No, the same thing in the eighth inning, ninth inning. I like the job that Darren could do. I like the job that Brad could do. I like the job that Michael could do. I like the job that Dunson could do. And looked like it was going to be one of those who's going to be more than one inning. So nobody's been pitching better for us than Ubaldo, too. So, you know, there's a lot of different ways to look at it. That's the way we went. It didn't work out.
Buck, with the season on the line, do you regret not having your best relief pitcher in the game at all and leaving him on the bench?
Well, you could do afterwards, yeah. But, you know, we went for about four innings there trying to get to that spot, and it looked like, you know, if he pitches a couple of innings, if he can physically, and you're assuming, which is, you know, a pretty good assumption with the way he's pitched this year. But, no, and playing on the road has a little something to do with it, too. But we have some good options that have done a great job for us all year, and Zach's one of those.
So even with runners on first and third there and Zach's ground ball rate and you guys needing a double play, was there anything that crossed your mind about bringing...
By the way, I want to say this about the reporters while we sit here and talk about Buck Showalter, and I'm kind of defending Showalter here, not because obviously he made the right decision. He didn't. But we didn't know that until after it all came out. So it's easy to second guess and play the armchair quarterback or the post-game quarterback, post-game manager in this case. So I'm defending Showalter, but I also want to say this. I think these reporters are outstanding. It is not easy. And Jim, how many times have we been on these airwaves playing post-game questions from reporters and saying, this guy is an idiot. What a ridiculously stupid thing to ask a player, a coach, a manager, whatever the case is, especially after an emotional outcome, that sort of thing. We've had those. But these reporters, you know, these Baltimore reporters want to do what? They want to scream, what the hell is the matter with you? Why didn't you use Britton?
Right.
They want to go crazy right now. They're probably as frustrated, and they've got to be the conduit, the liaison between, you know, the team, the manager, and the fans, and they want to yell for the fans. Dude, what's that? So they're asking these questions very, very professionally and doing a very good job of not trying to embarrass the manager. They're not trying to show anger, but they're just trying to say, you know, and they're asking a multitude of ways, why didn't you use it? And here, of course, is the greatest example of it.
Even with runners on first and third there and Zach's ground ball rate and you guys needing a double play, was there anything that crossed your mind about bringing him in there instead of Ubaldo?
Sure. It crosses your mind from about the sixth inning on. So, you know, there's a bunch of decisions to make there during the course of the game, and we put our pitchers pitch real well the whole game to hold that club to two runs at that point. And you could make a case probably other than Zach, Ubaldo pitching better than anybody we've had for the last six or seven starts. So, you know, those are a lot of tough decisions, but we've been maybe a little different if you're playing at home. But you know, there's a lot of different ways to look at it. If we didn't have so many good options down there and wanted to have a strong sack and have him there in case the game goes extra innings, but there's so much more to that game. But I know the world that you have to live in, so I respect that.
And what an incredibly professional answer by Buck Showalter. I know the world you have to live in. You're a reporter. It's your job to second-guess me. It's your job to question, my judgment here, and I respect that. What a great, great professional attitude that he has. Back to his point now. Again, he said what a great job our pitchers did holding them to two runs until that point, or up to that point, right? Think about that for a moment. What a great job he did up to that, we did up to that point. In other words, that's his very professional and kind way of saying, I didn't use Zach in the ninth, did I? But we got through, didn't we? I didn't use him in the 10th, did I? But we got through, didn't we? So in other words, Buck Showalter's response to, hey, you know, Buck, how come you didn't use Zach Britton in the 11th? You needed to get him in there. Why were you waiting to use him for, you know, for a save when you needed him just to shut them down and then try to score and win? The way some of these writers are saying, some of the analysts, some of the pundits, some of the critics are saying, he's saying, how come none of you complained that I didn't use him in the ninth? Because the result that we got in the ninth was a good one. We stayed tied and went to the 10th. How come you didn't complain that I didn't use him in the 10th? In other words, every time I went to somebody else and he got us three outs, you were fine. And guess what? We were in a better position because we still had Zach. And we could still use him to finish the game if that's what it came down to. But then it comes to the 11th, and Ubaldo, I bring out my long man, essentially, because I need Ubaldo to go perhaps two, three, four, or five innings if this is going to be a marathon in which the offenses aren't getting it done. I bring out my long guy, and then I keep Zach ready to close that out if we do get one scratched across. And now you're telling me what an idiot I am. So, it was a really, really great professional response, I think, by Buck Showalter to some very good questions, legitimate criticisms. Because at the end of the day, Texas is hosting Toronto instead of Baltimore. So that means the Baltimore manager messed up. At the end of the day, we can all agree that it was the wrong call because of the way things worked out. Jimenez gave up the laser 441 feet later to Edwin Encarnacion, and it's Toronto at Texas. But I am not going to just, you know, jump all over this guy and tap dance on him with both feet the way so many other people are saying it was just a lock. It was a given that you don't go to him in that situation. You go to Zach Britton because, you know what, you didn't say that in the ninth. You didn't say it in the 10th, and they were still playing in the 11th. And I think that's important to talk about. I think it's important to get that message out there. All right, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to take a quick time out here. I do understand Matt Lodi is going to be available, but I think we're going to be able to talk to him after the top. We do have a conversation coming up at the bottom of the next hour at 4:35 with Jason Candle, the head coach of the UT Rockets. So we're going to do that coming up at 4:40 or so anyway as we talk football with you as we do each and every week with Coach Candle. So we're going to talk a little baseball, not only about last night's wild card play-in game between the Orioles and the Blue Jays, but we're going to talk also about the start of the ALDS tomorrow night in Cleveland where the Indians will host the Boston Red Sox. Trevor Bauer on the mound for the Indians. It's going to be something special, I think, in Cleveland. So we'll talk with Matt Lodi about that coming up, but not before I tell you about the Buckeye Store and more. The College and Pro Superstore in Sylvania. Football season means Buckeye season. And if you are a fan of the Scarlet and Gray, then I know you already know where your paradise is. Your Nirvana is in Sylvania at the Buckeye Store and more. By the way, 10% store-wide savings. That's right. Everything is on sale. Doesn't matter if you want to wear it or decorate your car with it, your cubicle, your man cave, your garage. Doesn't matter. If it's in Scarlet and Gray, you'll find it, along with hundreds of new items arriving every single day at the Buckeye Store in Moore, Sylvania. And by the way, if you can't stand Scarlet and Gray, don't worry about it. Got a lot of love for you, too. Wolverines Fan Zone, Fighting Irish, Spartans, Falcons, Rockets, and Tigers also at the Buckeye Store and more. So you'll find anything and everything for the team that you love. It's in Sylvania. Brutus the Buckeye is on the roof. Big Brutus is on the roof waving you in the giant inflatable at the Buckeye Store and more at Starlight Plaza, 5700 Monroe, right in between Ralphie's and Dave's in front of Prometica. That's the Buckeye Store and more in Sylvania, the College and Pro Superstore. All right, we'll get back to the baseball talk, your calls, and also a conversation with Matt Lodi out of Cleveland coming up next right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
There's a drive. Deep left field. Back toward that wall. And it's gone.
3-1 pitch to a really good swing at the 3-0. Hold and foul. He got his timing a little bit better.
Jose Bautista is a free agent at the end of the year. That's his first salvo. I'd like to stay.
Down the line and left. Pretty well hit. That ball is gone. Mark Trumbo, the major league leader in home runs, has given Baltimore the lead.
The Jimenez pitch. Fly ball deep left field. Yes, sir. The Blue Jays are going to Texas. Edwin Encarnacion.
Jimenez ready and delivers. Encarnacion, fly ball. Left field. The season is over. Encarnacion, a three-run homer, and the Orioles are going home.
Was everything okay with Zach Britton, and if so, why was he not used?
He was fine. He was fine. He was available.
Is it the philosophical thing of not wanting to use your closer in a tie game on the road?
No, the same thing in the 8th inning, 9th inning. I like the job that Darren could do. I like the job that Brad could do. I like the job that Michael could do. I like the job that Dunson could do. Looked like it was going to be one of those who's going to be more than one inning. Nobody's been pitching better for us than Ubaldo, too. There's a lot of different ways to look at it. That's the way we went. It didn't work out. It had nothing to do with philosophical.
It had to be made. There is simply no way that you can lose a winner-take-all game like that without using a relief pitcher who has the greatest ERA in a season of any pitcher ever. It's allowed 4 earned runs the entire season, 1 earned run since April, and to not use him in that game and go home is something that's going to be very difficult for this team to live with.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
The experts are all coming for Buck Showalter with pitchforks and torches and hot tar and feathers, and I still say leave the man alone. Welcome as we continue right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. By the way, really interesting calls there. We played them back-to-back, the Orioles and the Toronto Blue Jays, different radio calls. One of them, 2 seconds after the pitch hits the bat, maybe not even 2 seconds after Encarnacion squares up that Ubaldo Jimenez fastball and sends it 441 feet from its starting point. 2 seconds after, one announcer says, "And we're going to Texas." And the other announcer is saying, literally simultaneously on their separate broadcast, "The season is over." I mean, there was such a no doubt about her, attitude, if you will, on that. And one thing that Greeny pointed out this morning that I thought was fascinating, I had not noticed when I watched the live version and then the multitude of replays of the Encarnacion game winner, the walk-off game winner, was Matt Wieters, the Orioles catcher. It was so brilliant that Greenberg noticed this morning on Mike and Mike. Did you see it, Jim?
Yes.
Matt Wieters, the catcher, literally faster than the announcers could say, "And we're going to Texas, and the season is over." Faster than that, Matt Wieters had dropped his head, his chin to his chest, turned and walked away.
He knew.
He knew from the sound of the crack of the bat. He knew. Quite literally, that was it. It was done. He didn't have to watch it. He didn't have to see, is it going to stay fair or foul? He didn't have to see, is it going to clear it or not? He knew because it was a laser and it was headed to the upper deck. Literally. And it's so true. You watch Matt Wieters after the swing. You know, he's already in his crouch, but he's rising up, of course, to take the pitch. And by the time the ball, I don't know, maybe it hasn't even left the infield yet, which is hard to imagine considering how hard it was smoked. But by the time it literally got to, you know, the infield and outfield grass extended, if you will, up into the air, he's already halfway to the dugout. And it's so true. Just the sense of, oh, you know, the sense of,
yep,
of despair. Just the, oh, he just ended our season. It was really an amazing thing to see. It's just, you know, and as Greeny and Golic put it this morning, and I give them credit for this line, I certainly wouldn't steal it or this comparison, but there's a new face of agony of defeat. You know, the skier from all those years ago on Wild World of Sports, agony of defeat. Watching that swing from Encarnacion and then watching the face through the mask of Matt Wieters as he just, all of the air, all of the energy, all of the life sucked out of his body. He slumps his shoulders, drops his head, and turns and walks away. I don't think Encarnacion would have had a chance for a bat flip. Seriously. Of course, you laugh, but I'm only laughing because you reminded me
that it's Toronto, Texas next. We're going to hear a lot of that over the next week.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt about that. But honestly, I don't think he made it to the left-handed batter's box.
No.
By the time Wieters had already been walking to the dugout. I mean, he made that swing, and I think Wieters was halfway to the dugout before Encarnacion made it to the other side of the plate to begin the trot. That's how incredible that was. All right, let's talk more playoff baseball. A little reaction, more reaction to last night and the decision by Buck Showalter not to use the greatest closer, the greatest really reliever in baseball this year, but also to preview tomorrow's game number one in the ALDS between the host Cleveland Indians and the visiting Boston Red Sox. Our good friend Matt Lodi from NEOSportsInsiders.com and the Associated Press in Cleveland joining us with a preview. Matt, how are you, buddy? Hello, Matt. Can you hear me, Matt?
Hey, Bob. I got you. I'm sorry
about
that.
There he is. You're a hard man to reach sometimes, and now you're a hard man to hear us. But we got
you. These press conferences run long, run short, run when we're not expecting them. So we
just got done with
John
Farrell. Any news from that press you can share with us?
Yeah, I mean, John Farrell just spoke a little bit ago. I mean, nothing out of the ordinary for the game, obviously, tomorrow. A big portion of it, you know, talking about the relationship with Terry Francona, also brought up about the Indians' aggressive base running and how the Red Sox are going to have to deal with that. If there's one element of this series that the Indians certainly do have the advantage in, I think, Bob, and you'll agree, is that this team can run. This wasn't expected to be a team that can run, but I think Rajay Davis changed all that when he came aboard and suddenly got to the point where he was stealing bases all over the place. So, you know, nothing crazy out of the ordinary. I think both him and Terry Francona, being such good friends, they know each other so well. They know their mentality so well. I think it's going to be a very entertaining series, and I don't think this is going to be a three-game series either way by any means. I would be very, very surprised if this thing doesn't go at least five. It's got to go five, but you know what
right.
I mean? I think it's going to go all of them. I really do.
Let's dig into some of that in a moment. But first, Matt, everybody who watches and covers baseball for a living has weighed in with their opinion on what happened last night in Toronto at Rogers Center.
Yeah.
Buck Showalter, I think, clearly, we know now because we are in the wonderfully fortunate position of being able to see things after the result plays out, so we can say he was wrong. He made the wrong decision to go with Ubaldo Jimenez there and to keep him in, et cetera. But I'm trying to put ourselves in the position of the before. And Buck Showalter, I think, made a very good case for, look, I didn't use Zach in the ninth, and we got through it. I didn't use him in the tenth, and we got through it. And I wasn't sure how many it was going to need before, or it was going to take before I needed him. I don't want to burn him out in the 11th or 12th either. What if we're going 16? And Ubaldo is a guy that I can count on to give us four or five because he has been just dynamic in his last six or seven starts of the season. So your thoughts. Everybody's got an opinion. None of them are right or wrong, but I think Buck Showalter is being made out to be far more of a villain than he needs to be.
Well, I mean, obviously, he's in a no-win situation there because unless the Orioles win the game, he's going to get criticized, you know, because even if he would have went to Britton and maybe Britton pitches one inning and then he's got to go to Ubaldo in the 12th, I mean,
no.
And they lose the game in the 12th, you know, there's really no way that Showalter can win. And, you know, was I questioning it? Sure. I mean, I thought to myself, boy, I think I'd go to him here, especially because of the fact, Bob, if you watch that game last night, boy, Baltimore's offense was not very good. I mean, they, you know, a lot of ground balls in the extra innings. I mean, they were basically just not really putting good at bats together at all. So let's give some credit to the Toronto pitching staff, and also the Baltimore offense deserves some criticism too. I mean, this was an offense that was built to hit. And yet they really didn't do that from about the fifth or sixth inning on yesterday.
Well, I think you could say the same thing, though, about both teams. I mean, this was
a pitcher's
duel. I mean, there was four hits all day for the Orioles and just nine for the Toronto Blue Jays, including that game winner and, you know, and two others in the 11th. So neither team was really, you know, scoring, you know.
Killing the ball, right.
And so that kind of goes toward it, buttresses my point, I think, Showalter's point, where it's like, look, you know, it's a gut feeling here that if I don't think we're going to score anytime soon and they're not going to score anytime soon, I might have to ride this out for a little while. I can't burn through all of my one-inning relievers. Sooner or later, I'm going to have to give the ball to one of my starters and make him go long if this is going to be a marathon type of game. And I made the decision that now is that time with Jimenez, and obviously it didn't work out. I don't think we can just automatically say because of that he's
no.
It's the worst.
And I think that's probably – and that's a good theory to have if you're Buck Showalter that, hey, you know, we are going to have to play for a while but you had a feeling that was a one-hit type of game. In other words, one hit was going to end that game one way or another. And if you're Buck Showalter, what you're hoping is the guy like Chris Davis or Manny Machado or somebody gets a hold of one, and then you got your closer ready to come out in the whatever inning it would have been. It just so happens that, you know, Ubaldo from the first pitch he threw just didn't look right. And, you know, it's a pressure situation. And I know Ubaldo. I remember him obviously when he was in Cleveland. he was one of those guys that when he was on, he was on, and when he wasn't, and clearly last night he wasn't. I think he threw a total of, what, five or six pitches in the game before Encarnacion
five pitches, and three of them were base hits, or well, two base hits and the bomb.
I mean, you ride with the guy, you know, because you felt like, as Ron Darling pointed out in that broadcast, he had a great month of September, and they were hoping to catch lightning in a bottle, and it just didn't work out. But, you know, I thought Toronto going into the game was the better team. I'm not surprised they won. Playing in that Sky Dome is not easy, or Rogers Center, whatever it's called. And I think everybody in the world wanted to see, other than Baltimore fans, wanted to see this rematch we're going to see coming up between Toronto and Texas. I mean, it's been brewing for a year. I think it's going to be a great, you know, I think this is a 6 or 7 game series also. I think the home teams are going to dominate in this series, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I think it's going to be phenomenal, too, especially with Rougned Odor having his rematch, if you will. The second fight, Odor-Bautista 2, coming up. It's going to be very interesting. Those two teams hate each other, as we know. We know what happened with Odor and his 8-game suspension after clocking Jose Bautista. It'll be very interesting to see what happens the first time a pitch goes inside on somebody. And not even talking about purpose pitches or now here's our latest retaliation to you. I don't think that will be the case in a playoff series. Nobody wants to be suspended for the postseason or to miss even one postseason game. So I don't think anybody's going to be doing any purpose-type things. But let's face it, you also have to pitch big swingers inside and back them off the plate. And once one gets too far inside and nicks somebody, is it going to be on again? So there's going to be a fantastic series there on the other side of the American League. But let's get back to the side of the American League division series that we are interested in. The Indians are going to host the Red Sox in Game 1 tomorrow. And I'll be honest with you, I wish I was as confident as you are that this thing is going to go 5. And I'm not saying that I think it's going to go 3 either, just 3 either. But just given the circumstances the way they are, with Carrasco and Salazar not going, and this being a Bauer-Kluber-Tomlin threesome to start it out, it doesn't bode particularly well, even though the Indians have overcome all kinds of injury obstacles all season long. And it starts with tomorrow. Trevor Bauer, the mercurial player that he is, he's kind of like what you just described about Ubaldo Jimenez.
Yeah,
you don't know
you're
what
right.
You're going to get. He could be lights out for 8 solid, or he could just, you know, hit 3 people in an inning the way he did with the Tigers 2 weeks ago. You just don't know what you're going to get from him. But I think we have a pretty good idea of what we're going to get from Rick Porcello, who had a career year and is on the hill tomorrow. The former Tiger, 22-4, 3.15 ERA, odds-on favorite, I would say, for the American League Cy Young Award, and he's going to be opposed by, again, an enigmatic Trevor Bauer that we're just not certain about in Game 1.
Well, I do obviously give the pitching advantage to Boston, but you know, there is the intangible about playing at Progressive Field, where the Indians had the best home record. I believe they were either a game behind Texas, or they were right there with Texas for the best home record in the American League. And, you know, the Indians showed the ability, you know, to overcome so much. I mean, we talked to Mike Napoli yesterday, and that was a big portion of his, of what we talked to him about in terms of him being able to, you know, this team being able to come together, you know, overcome injuries, overcome suspensions, the guys like Marlon Byrd and Abraham Almonte. But, you know, I think if you're the Indians, the theory is pretty simple, Bob. You got to score 3-4 runs, and you got to get to the bullpen in the sixth inning. I think that's the way this team is. If they're going to move on, that's how they got to win games. You go, you know, Dan Otero, obviously Andrew Miller, Brian Shaw, and Cody Allen. You've got to find a way, hopefully, to scrounge out a couple runs and get to those guys by the sixth inning. Because really, to me, if you can get 5.5, maybe 6 innings out of Bauer, you're looking great, and I think that gives this team the advantage. On the other hand, you know, Bauer gives up 3 runs in the first inning. It could be one of those long nights. But, you know, Trevor is a very analytical guy, and, you know, he did have a bad outing earlier in the year against Boston in Fenway Park. But, you know, I look at their 6 games that the two teams played together, and a lot of them were kind of a wash because the first couple games in Cleveland, 2 of them got rained out. You know, the opener got cold out, if you will, and the Thursday game got rained out. They played a game in August where Josh Tomlin had his only really decent August outing. You know, if you're Boston, you want to do what you've been doing. But, you know, they had a bump in the road this last weekend, and they got to be not so happy about that. I mean, they had the ability, if they would have taken care of business at home against the Toronto team that, you know, they obviously are, they know very well, if they would have done what they needed to do, they'd be starting this series in Boston. So, you know, and if you're the Indians, you got to be feeling pretty good about that. You went to Detroit, you know, you won the thing in Detroit. Obviously, the next couple of days didn't work out. And then you went to Kansas City, and, you know, you won the three games you needed to win in Kansas City. So if you're the Indians, you're feeling okay right now. I mean, you certainly are feeling better about starting this thing at home than in Fenway Park.
Not only that, we're talking to Matt Lodi with NEOSportsInsiders.com and also with the Associated Press radio side out there in Cleveland. He'll be covering this game tomorrow, game number one, which you'll hear right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, and 8:08 start time, and our coverage will start at 7:30. Not just the fact that it is at home for the Indians, but they're not playing the red-hot Boston Red Sox that I was afraid
right.
they were going to have to play, because the Red Sox had won 11 straight, and then suddenly, when that streak was broken, and this kind of is, you know, kind of been the way it is for a lot of teams that have had long winning streaks, now they've lost five out of their last six coming into the postseason. They lost three straight to the Yankees. They lost two out of three to the Blue Jays there at the end of the regular season. So this isn't a team that's actually coming in with momentum, whereas we know the Indians, for what it's worth, and maybe it's not much, but they, of course, swept the Royals to take that home field and to again, come into the series with a little bit of momentum. And that is the one thing, if there is an intangible aspect, no disrespect whatsoever to current Red Sox manager John Farrell, but I'll tell you what, if there is an intangible, I don't think anybody can exploit it or take advantage of it better than former Red Sox manager and current Tribe skipper Tito Francona.
Well, and Terry has had his pulse on this Indians team the whole season. I mean, you know, again, if we would have talked back in April, I mean, I know we talked back in April, but if we would have said to each other back in April, oh, by the way, the Indians are going to win 90-plus games without the services of Carrasco for a decent portion of the year, without the services of Salazar, without Brantley, all for but 11 games, and all these other things that happened too, suspensions, other injuries, you know, Corey Kluber going down with a quad injury rather late in the season here in that Detroit series, you probably would have told me, yeah, they might finish third in the division, you know, maybe second if they're lucky. But, you know, they have overcome. And I think that there's something to be said about that, a team that is that close-knit as this Indians team is, and the ability to overcome. And I'm not saying Boston doesn't have that intangible, but I think Terry said something yesterday that meant, I don't know if it was a crack at the Red Sox or if it was just something he said off the cuff. He goes, this team, this current Indians team, I have not had to babysit like any other team I have ever had. And I wonder if that was sort of a dig at that last year or two in Boston when there were all those controversial things that happened
sure.
with that Red Sox team. You know, because this is still a very young Indians team, and you would think the term babysitting means almost just the opposite, that he's got to go in there on a daily basis and tell these young guys, hey, you got to be under control, you've got to be more focused. But, you know, this team is certainly, you know, when they've had to come out of slumps, when they've had to do certain things, even though they're a young team, they've been able to do it. And that's why I don't think this is going to be a three-game series. I don't even think it's going to be a four-game series. I think it's going the distance. And, you know, if you've got a Corey Kluber going in game five, which is what you would have back here in Cleveland a week from tonight, I do give the Indians the slight edge. Now, you know, I might be totally wrong, and this thing might be over on Sunday if Boston is able to get hot again at the plate. But I just think the Indians' bullpen is so good, and I do think their offense is good enough to scrounge out a couple of runs to where I think if they can get into the sixth inning with a lead, I think that they've got a lot of, I think there's going to be a lot of momentum on the side. If you can go to an Andrew Miller for two innings, a Dan Otero, and as I said earlier, Brian Shaw and Cody Allen, I give the Indians the slight edge in that department.
Yeah, and it is interesting. I'm looking at the pitching matchups, and I know we addressed this already, Matt, but, and we're talking to Matt Lodi, NEOSportsInsider.com, postseason baseball style. But tomorrow's matchup is clearly, I think, you know, in the favor of the Boston Red Sox with Porcello.
Yeah, I agree.
22-4. The year he's had, again, he's better than he ever was for the Tigers. Just a career year for him. But the next night is, you know, you got your ace, Corey Kluber, going, but there's no drop off really for the Red Sox, because David Price, you know, Corey's 18-9, David Price is 17-9. That is just a nip and tuck battle every single step of the way. I think I would like to say that Kluber is a clear cut favorite here, but I can't really say that when opposed by David Price. Then in game three, which would be the first game in Boston, that's when you got Buchholz and Tomlin, and I think it's kind of a wild card there. We don't know what you're going to get from Tomlin, and you really don't know what you're going to get from an inconsistent sub-500 Clay Buchholz in game three.
Well, I will say this about game three. I do like Josh Tomlin. I think this is a guy, talk about overcoming. I mean, this is a guy who went 0-5 in August, His only good outing, by the way, in August was against the Red Sox in a makeup game, August 15th at Progressive Field. They lost that game 3-2, but he gave up two home runs in the game. I believe it was Jackie Bradley Jr., and I know that David Ortiz, who's hit four home runs this year against the Indians, hit a two-run blast in that game. You know, but Josh, really, if you look at the month of September, he's been very, very good. And, you know, I think if you're the Indians, you feel good about that game. I think the game that obviously you need to find a way to win is tomorrow. And then you come back on Friday afternoon against David Price, a guy who dominated the Indians in the opener this year, 10 strikeouts in six innings, and only gave up two runs. But again, this comes down to, can the Indians find a way in those first two games to scrounge out enough runs? You know, will they play small ball? You know, will a guy like Mike Napoli come up against the former team and you know, hit one out of the park? And, you know, Carlos Santana, another guy who's been red hot, can he get hot in a postseason type of situation in a five-game set? So, you know, again, Porcello and Price, very, very difficult, no doubt about it. If you're the Red Sox, you want to get out of here with a split. Kind of if you're the Indians, you still have to look at it like, we want to win the two games here so we can go back to Boston, you know, with the clear-cut advantage. But, you know, even if you're the Indians, maybe that's your theory. Hey, we'll get out of here with a split, and we'll take our chances in Game 3 in Boston because we like the matchup better with Tomlin and Clay Buchholz, the guy, as you mentioned earlier, is a sub-par 500 guy. If you're the Indians, though, it's about finding a way to get runs, and that's going to not be easy against these first two Boston pitchers, no question about it.
What's the working theory about Game 4? We know that Rodriguez is already penciled in for the Red Sox. What's the theory here as far as who the Indians will go with?
Well, I mean, you know, can you go to a guy like a Bauer on a short rest? I mean, I think a lot of it's going to depend on what happens in Game 1. I mean, if this is a guy who, you know, his head is in the game and he can give you 5, 6, 7 good innings, you know, I'm sure Terry would have a lot more confidence going back to him in a short rest situation. You know, you got Kluber already basically ready for game five.
But we're talking about way short. You know, we're talking about Thursday to Monday. We're talking about Thursday to Monday is where he was.
Well, we know that Danny Salazar is unavailable. We know that much.
Yeah, he's not even on the postseason roster, which was a couple of minutes ago.
Yeah, they sent him to Arizona to get ready maybe for an opportunity to come back here if this team advances. But, you know, that's a good question, Bob. I mean, there's, you know, this team is so beat up. I mean, they don't have a lot of options. You know,
it's got to be Clevinger, right? I mean, I'm just looking at the roster.
I mean, it might
the postseason
be.
Roster. There's 11.
Yeah, I mean, it might have to be a bullpen game. You know, and I mean that, you know, from the standpoint of, it might have to be Clevinger for 3 or 4 innings, Zach McAllister for 2 innings, and then you try to get to the bullpen again. I know that sounds ridiculous based on the fact that this is the playoffs and you want to throw your best guys out there, but it just shows you how beat up this Indians pitching staff has been. I mean, you look back at the beginning of the year, you know, Kluber, Carrasco, Salazar, Tomlin, and Bauer, to now basically, you know, Bauer, Kluber, Tomlin, and a couple other guys, you know, and I hate this, you know, and that's tough. I mean, and that's why I think a lot of the national pundits love the Red Sox, and it's hard for me to say that they're not going to be right in this situation, but it's hard for me to go against what the Indians have done this year just because of the fact that every time you say, oh, there's no way, they come back and they prove you wrong.
Yeah,
you know,
and I feel the same way. I feel the same way. But I mean, you know, so the heart, of course, is with the home club. But if I was, you know, speaking from a purely objective point of view, I would absolutely love the Red Sox because of that situation. Real quick, the postseason roster, the division series roster, was just announced, and Yan Gomes is on it. So they're going to carry three catchers here. Does that surprise you?
Yeah. No, not really, because I think Yan proved that. You know, he proved in the at-bat Sunday that he can hit, you know, and I know that you don't want to sit there and count on that, but, you know, as I was saying the other day to somebody, I mean, could you imagine this Indians team? There's another thing we didn't even hit on, is the fact that this team basically played most of the season without a catcher. I mean, from an offensive perspective, but if there's one guy who can put some pop in the bat and actually do some things at the plate right now, you would think it would be Yan Gomes. I mean, you know, I mean, he was able to hit 8 home runs in the first 6 weeks of the season before he really went into that slump. So, you know, good guy on and off the field. You'd love to see him succeed at this level again. I'm not surprised they're going to carry 3 guys. I think, you know, because of all the injuries in the rotation and as far as the pitching staff is concerned, it's not a bad idea to have 3 catchers, you know, because you might have to have a game where you score 8 or 9 runs, and you're hoping that Yan can contribute in some fashion to that.
Yeah, no question about it. It's going to be really a fascinating look at Tito Francona's ability to pull strings, push buttons, and motivate guys to do things that are above really what their capabilities are. But they've done it all season long. to the tune of a division championship. And to say that they can't do it, I will not say that. I will predict. I think Boston wins this series, but I will not say that they cannot do it, and I will not be surprised if the Indians find a way to overcome those injuries yet again and find their way into the American League Championship Series. Matt Lodi, great analysis. We appreciate it. Thanks for making the time. I know you got press conferences to get to and more, but we appreciate your time this afternoon. Enjoy the game tomorrow.
Thank you so much, Bob. We'll talk again.
Matt Lodi, NEOSportsInsiders.com. Take a look at his website and check that out as you surf your way through more baseball coverage online. It is a great place to visit. They got a lot of really good stuff about all of the Cleveland teams and the divisions that they are in. So the Indians and Red Sox tomorrow. Cushlin, what does your gut tell you before game one?
Before game one, my gut tells me Red Sox in four.
Porcello and Bauer, advantage Porcello. Price and Kluber.
I'm going Kluber at home for that one.
I'm sorry. I would like to say that too, but I'm going to say coin flip. It's not a huge advantage for Kluber. And David Price is an experienced veteran stud pitcher. He's 17-9. Corey's 18-9. I'm going to call it a coin flip with the slight edge to Kluber only because of home.
I can't really make a big argument on that type of thing.
And then Buchholz and Buchholz has not had a good year. Clay Buchholz has not had a good year. You might even give Tomlin the edge there, even though Tomlin, of course, had that August and September, early part of September from hell.
My worry about Tomlin is, despite his recovery later in September, still led the American League in home runs allowed. That is not a good sign for Fenway.
And then the worst part about it for me is, even let's suppose things go your way, and you do get wins in, say, the second two. And I don't know why I'm surrendering game one, but I guess I just feel that way because I don't know what I'm going to get out of Bauer. But let's say they do end up, up 2-1 going into game number four in Boston. They have Rodriguez scheduled, not that he's a stud or anything. The Indians are really in a position where they haven't even announced a potential game four starter because it's just that thin. Could they come back on real short rest with Bauer? Probably not. They're probably going to have to go a Clevinger and a bullpen type thing, but they're not even announcing it.
The only possible advantage they have is the part in game five you're mentioning, which is at least Kluber would be the Indian starter in that one. That makes me feel a little better.
Tuesday.
Yep.
Because there's
so he'll be on normal rest. Yeah.
Right. Which makes it possible for Kluber to go in games two and five. So that's where it is. And then in that case, it would probably be a Kluber-Porcello matchup, the two staff aces. So that's where that is. All right, hey, we're going to shift gears completely here in a moment because we're going to talk football, which, of course, we love to do. And we love to talk high school football. We love to talk college football. We love to talk professional football. So two things. On the high school level, in a moment or two, I'm going to give you a pair of tickets. No, correction, a four-pack of tickets to a great game. Well, I don't know competitively wise, but it's going to be a great Northwest Ohio football atmosphere. Central Catholic takes on St. Francis at the Glass Bowl on Friday night at 7 o'clock. We know about the state-ranked Central Catholic Fighting Irish. We know St. Francis has been struggling, but it's still great football action for us. We got a four-pack of tickets there, and I'll give that away in a moment. But that's not before I tell you more about the College and Pro Superstore known as the Buckeye Store and more in Sylvania and Starlight Plaza. Do not forget, when you get there, you don't have to be a Buckeye fan. I know so many Michigan fans who absolutely love the Buckeye Store and more because there's more Michigan gear in the Wolverines fan zone there than there is in any other store, any other Michigan-themed store in Northwest Ohio or Southeast Michigan. You still have tons of items, whether it's clothing, things that you want to wear, apparel, or things you want to use to decorate that special place in your home or your office. All right, so there's the Wolverines fan zone, the Fighting Irish fan zone, the Spartans, the Rockets, the Falcons, and the Tigers. So it's all. That's the College and Pro Superstore aspect of the Buckeye Store and more. But as you do know, there are just hundreds of new Buckeye items coming in each and every day at the largest store in Ohio dedicated to Ohio State gear. So you get it all at the Buckeye Store and more. And you also get 10% store-wide savings right now at the Buckeye Store and more in Sylvania, 5700 Monroe, right between Ralphie's and Dave's in front of Prometica. It's in Starlight Plaza, the Buckeye Store and more, the College and Pro Superstore. So from there, we go to more college football. Jason Candle is the head coach of the UT Rockets, made the gutsy call to go for two and to take a lead with a minute 14 left at BYU this past Friday night. They were up 53-52. They're about to get a huge win. And then bang, as zeros are on the clock, a field goal from BYU hands UT their first loss of the season. Eastern Michigan is coming up next. We're going to hear from Jason Campbell talking to Jim Cushlin right after this timeout. And this timeout includes that four-pack of tickets from for St. Francis and Central Catholic Friday night at the Glass Bowl. Caller 10, they are yours at 866-240-1065. Right back on the ticket.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And welcome back into the extravaganza. Jim Cushlin here with you. Time to switch gears from all the baseball and fun stuff. Go to college football. We like to recap pretty much everybody here in the region. And after a crazy, crazy game back on Friday night, the Rockets did fall in that game to BYU 55-53. And to help us explain it all and where the Rockets are right now, we welcome in the head coach of the Toledo Rockets. He is Jason Candle. Hi, Coach. How you doing?
Doing great, Jim. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I know it was a defeat, but my goodness, for anyone who happened to stay up late night around these parts back on Friday, what a football game overall. 55-53, you guys fall at the last minute. Let's walk us through first in that fourth quarter, because you guys had come back and had that final drive of that took the one-point lead. You get the two-point conversion. Walk me through that call. Is this as simple as, hey, we're on the road, go for two kind of thing?
No, I had made my mind up, and we had made our mind up as a staff that, you know, if we'd scored that last drive, that's what we were going to do. You know, I felt like our defense was, you know, a little gassed, and, you know, we played a lot of snaps, and it was a long night, a late start for us out there. You know, tough environment, tough place to play. I thought that would be our best chance to, you know, to try to win the game. You know, unfortunately, after we got the two, we couldn't get a stop, that final stop, but, you know, I give our kids a lot of credit. You know, they've fought for 60 minutes and played really hard. And like I said, in a very tough environment, you know, a loud crowd, and what I think at the end of the year will prove to a lot of people that we played a fantastic football team that night. And certainly hats off to BYU for having a great plan and exposing us a little bit in some areas that we got to get corrected.
And you're so right. Before we get into some of that others, I'm so right, I think, Coach, about the how your guys fought back. I mean, goodness, but in the blink of an eye at the beginning of this game, it, you know, it was 7-0, the kick return and then a 75-yard touchdown play. Your guys fought right back. You got a touchdown on the first drive, and it was a lot of back and forth in many ways. After that, you guys were then tied into the locker room. It was an outstanding banner kind of day for your offense, and let's start right there. Another outstanding effort from Logan Woodside, 30 for 38, 505, did have the two picks, but also threw five touchdown passes. Talk to me about his night.
Yeah, I thought he was really good yet again. You know, and I think in a night where, once again, you know, safeties and linebackers are creeping around the line of scrimmage, we were able to, you know, let our guys on the perimeter who had one-on-one matchups get behind the defense and win those battles. And Logan did a great job of connecting the dots and putting the ball on them so they could have a chance to make those plays, and certainly they did. But, you know, I thought he was outstanding, you know, for the most part. You know, the couple that he missed, you know, one was one interception. I wouldn't put that on him. You know, that was a tip ball that, you know, we didn't quite get the guy cut down. And then, you know, the other one, that was a bad decision by his part, which are one of the ones that he probably wishes he had back. So, you know, yeah, like I said, he's a work in progress. He's playing at a really high level, though, and, you know, if he can maintain that the rest of the year out, we'll have a chance to be where we want to be, I believe.
And he had guys catching the ball, of course, two for him. Johnson with 182 had three touchdowns. Of the five, did the sophomore. Thompson over 160 with a touchdown themselves. And we've said this many times as I've had you on so far this season, Coach. To a small degree, you can't be a good quarterback if you don't have outstanding receivers, and you guys certainly did on Friday night.
Yeah, Coach Sage has done a great job of developing those guys and getting them, you know, all playing at a consistent high level. And, you know, and like one thing I think that's really stands out to me about that group is they're selfless guys. They're not, you know, pounding the table. You know, they're not me first guys. They're team guys. They're not pounding the table to get the football. And, you know, they go out and go about their business. If it turns into 180 yards receiving, so be it. If it doesn't, and they got to block most of the game, then they're content with doing that too. So, you know, our offense is clicking pretty well right now. Those guys have a huge part to do with that, and Coach Sage, like I said, has done a great job, you know, mentoring and developing those guys.
We're talking with head coach Jason Candle of the Toledo Rockets. Rockets fell last Friday at BYU in a thriller, 55-53. You mentioned a few moments ago, though, some things got exposed. I imagine most of those things are on the defense. From your perspective as the head coach, talk to me about some of that. What were the things specifically that you felt got a little exposed you guys need to work on?
Well, we got to tackle, and we got to stop the run. You know, that's first and foremost. That's our goal. That's what we set out to do each and every week, and we didn't do that. You know, we made a really good back, look like a superhero Friday night, and we got to do a better job of tackling the football, getting off blocks, and, you know, maintaining our gap. You know, that team's a good football team. It's a big physical team. They force you to to do your responsibility right 10 out of 10 times, not just 8 out of 10 or 9 out of 10 because the one or two you didn't do right, the ball went for 60 or 70-yard touchdown. So, you know, consistency is key. You know, I thought we lacked a little bit of that defensively and offensively too Friday night, and it cost us. You know, and hopefully we take that off the film and it doesn't come back to bite us again.
Now, it's been a couple days, obviously, since then, and these are the kind of games that sometimes, you know, can deflate players in a team. I doubt very highly that is the case. Walk me through the mindset of your guys as we're now a couple days removed from this.
Well, I think you learn a lot from, you know, setbacks, you know, and you – It's that way in life. It's that way in athletics. It's certainly that way in football. You know, you kind of got to readjust and recalibrate things and rethink and try to get back going. But I think our guys we have a mentally strong team. We got a team I think that'll respond very well. You know, we got to go up the road and play Eastern Michigan, who is off to a hot start and playing very good football in their own right and a confident team right now. So, you know, it doesn't get any easier for us. It's just, you know, the next week can we fix Toledo before somebody else fixes Toledo for us?
A good point, and we will get a little more into Eastern Michigan here in just a moment. But one more question, Coach Jason Candle, head coach of the Toledo Rockets, joining us here on the Extravaganza. 3-1 out of conference, obviously, based on how that game went Friday night, could easily be 4-0. Your overall assessment of this team, four games in, and with out of conference play done, you guys sit 3-1.
Still a work in progress, long way to go from where we want to be, but, you know, we are ready to open up conference play and excited to get that going and started. And, you know, I think this is something that this group of seniors has talked about for a long time, and hopefully they can go out and get accomplished what they set to accomplish.
Yeah, absolutely, and it is Eastern Michigan in Ypsilanti coming up on Saturday to open Mid-American Conference play. And as you mentioned, Coach, yeah, they don't seem as bad as Eastern Michigan usually is. They are 4-1 so far. Took out Bowling Green back last Saturday in their opener, and it's obviously one of those. In years past, many Mid-American Conference teams will see, oh, it's Eastern Michigan on the schedule. Okay, that is what it is. But not so much this time. That they're off to a good start, and maybe they're finally turning the corner. So you guys obviously cannot take them lightly.
Well, you better not, or you'll get beat. And that's a testament to Coach Creighton and his staff on, you know, the instilling some confidence in that group of kids. And they are, like I said, are, you know, playing at a high level right now and playing very confident, and rightfully so. You know, when you're able to get, you know, off to a good start like they have, and you know, there's some veteran guys on that roster and that have played a lot of football. So, you know, they've been through the struggle, they've been through the tough times, and now they're starting to see some rewards for all their hard work. So, you know, I'm sure that they're sitting, you know, in a really good spot in their mind and headed into conference play just like we are. So it should be a great game on Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a team that, as you mentioned, yeah, they do have some veterans, and sometimes that does help to have the upperclassmen, especially when you're a program like Eastern Michigan trying to turn the corner. They can do a few things well. From your point of view, what's the biggest thing you have to do to stop them?
Well, we got to be consistent. We got to be in our gap. We got to tackle the ball, get the run stopped, and then, you know, try to make them one dimensional. You know, I think it's a situation where, you know, we gotta shore up who we are and fix what we've been doing, and some of the things, like I said, that got exposed Friday night. You know, and force their quarterback to make tough throws. And I think offensively, we got to maintain some consistency, and certainly, you know, keep trying to play at a high level like we have been.
Head coach of the Toledo Rockets, Jason Candle, joining us here on the Extravaganza. How important in this game, Coach, is it to get off to a fast start, get your defense then out on the field with a lead, and have them work on some of the things that maybe didn't work so well in BYU? How key do you think that might be?
I don't put a lot of stock into that. I really don't. I think you can get up. You can get way caught up in, oh, we have to get off to a great start, and you have to do this, and you have to do that, or it'll be key in the game to get off to a good start. Well, what if you don't? Does that mean you just automatically fold the 10 up and you lose? I don't think so. So, you know, whether you get off to a great start or whether you don't, there's 60 minutes of football to be played, you know, and how today's football is played, there's plenty of snaps and plays that they're going to go on throughout the course of that 60-minute game. So, just like last Friday night, we talked about trying to maybe get off to a good start in that game, and we gave up a touchdown in the very first play of the game and took a big punch in the lip and probably tasted our own blood a little bit. And we had a choice. We could either respond or we could fold our tent, you know. And I think if you get caught up in just saying, hey, we got to start fast, we got to start fast, it can be really deflating if you don't. So whether we score on the first possession or whether we don't, we know we're going to be in a 60-minute football game, and we'll be ready to go.
Well said, Coach. Very well said. Always appreciate the time and the insight. The Toledo Rockets in Ypsilanti to take on Eastern Michigan coming up on Saturday afternoon. Opener of Mid-American Conference play. Best of luck for you out there, Coach. And hopefully we're talking about the 1-0 in the Mid-American Conference Toledo Rockets when we reconvene next week.
Thanks, Jim. Go Rockets.
That is head coach of the Toledo Rockets, Jason Candle, taking a few minutes to give us the lowdown. A crazy game for all who happened to stay up late last Friday. Back and forth. Rockets down early. Took the punch in the mouth. Responded well. Another outstanding performance on the offense. Obviously against an opponent of that quality in BYU relative to, say, a Fresno or an Arkansas State. It definitely is a different level. And that's why, as coach said, some of the things were exposed, like tackling and things like that on the defensive side. But I think what they experienced, especially falling at the end the way they did, is a good, is actually good. Because remember, it's still an out-of-conference game, and out-of-conference is done. The Rockets are still a very, very solid 3-1 and still look like one of the deadliest teams in the Mid-American Conference here in 2016. And I think that's going to help them, because if similar things happen, especially in the early stage of this game against Eastern Michigan, now, of course, Eastern Michigan's still a totally different type of opponent than BYU would be. The only difference being that this is not your older brother's, at least seemingly so far after five games, this is not your older brother's Eastern Michigan, who would constantly rack up 0-12 or 1-11 season. This feels like a program that may finally be turning things around a little bit. And if that's the case, it'll be great and to see the Rockets hopefully, you know, learn a few things from that game. The consistency that Coach Candle's talking about right there to, you know, not fold up the tent, so to speak. You know, you get punched in the mouth early. Hey, well, we proved it before. We can respond. We can come back, and we can turn the whole thing back around. I think that that might prove invaluable coming up in these next couple of games. It's at Eastern, then a couple, then three home games at the Glass Bowl against BG, Central Michigan, and Ohio before the Rockets would then have to hit the road again. So it is still lined up for the Toledo Rockets to obviously do some big time damage. We know what they're capable of offensively, and I do expect the defense, obviously, to have a rebound game. BYU is a different quality opponent, but don't forget, coming into that game, the Toledo Rocket defense was ranked 7th overall defense, anyway, in the nation coming up. Obviously, that rank and stat took a little bit of a hit, giving up 55 points to BYU, but so now a different ball game as Mid-American Conference play will begin, and the Rockets are still in prime position to do some damage, obviously, as we go forward in the Mid-American Conference season. It should be an absolute dandy. Saturday, Rockets on the road at Ypsilanti. It's a 3 o'clock kickoff, by the way, on Saturday afternoon for the Rockets MAC opener. And that's going to do it for this edition of the Extravaganza. Thanks so much, as always, for hanging out. Mike Miller on Drive Time. He is coming up next. And then a little bit later, 7:30 pregame time. Tonight we'll have the National League wild card game. Giants in New York to take on the Mets. Hopefully it's as entertaining as the end of that one in the American League was last night. And so we got that coming for you a little bit later here on The Ticket. Drive Time is next with Mike Miller. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep their trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.